Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wunjiro.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. We're also live on Facebook. Just go to our page, DW Africa, and drop your comments there on the stories that we will be covering.
Coming up, Ethiopian migrants reported missing off Yemen. We hear from the International Organization for Migration in Niger on measures taken to prevent migration.
We have 10 community mobilizers that go to the ghettos every day to bus stations to inform migrants on the risks of irregular migration.
Nigerians are celebrating their first appearance at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea.
Nigeria has won so many medals before in the Summer Olympics. Who knows, the girls may help the country win his first medals in the Winter Olympics.
These are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first, here's a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. The UN International Organization for Migration, the IOM, said Friday that at least 25 Ethiopian migrants were missing off the coast of Yemen. A spokesman for the organization said the missing people were on one of four boats that had taken about 600 Ethiopians to the coast of Yemen's Shabwa governorate. The missing Ethiopians were forced to swim to shore. No bodies have been found so far. The IOM said that about 87,000 people tried to reach Yemen from the Horn of Africa by boat in 2017, despite the ongoing conflict. In Germany, the head of the Social Democrats, Martin Schulz, has decided to drop his bid to lead the foreign ministry. Schulz made his decision after it became clear that opposition within his own party would risk jeopardizing the upcoming vote to confirm a grand coalition with the Christian Democrats led by Chancellor Angela Merkel. A poll showed nearly three-quarters of Germans were against Schulz becoming foreign minister. The United States government shut down for several hours on Friday. Congress could not pass a budget bill before the midnight deadline due to disagreements on immigration. Speaker of the House of Representatives, Paul Ryan, said the immigration debate had to wait until the budget was passed.
My commitment to working together on an immigration measure that we can make law is a sincere commitment. We will solve this DACA problem. Once we get this budget agreement done, and we will get this done for no matter how long it takes for us to stay here, we will focus on bringing that debate to this floor and finding a solution. But we cannot do that unless we pass this budget agreement.
This is the second time the U.S. government has shut down in 2018. President Donald Trump later tweeted that he had signed off on the budget, meaning the government funding will be extended until late March. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. A German court has sentenced an Afghan refugee to life in prison for killing a fellow refugee from Afghanistan. The man killed the woman because she converted from Islam to Christianity. The woman was killed in front of her two sons near a grocery store in southern Germany last year. The man may be released after 15 years, but this is rare in practice. In South Africa, the leader of the ANC party, Cyril Ramaphosa, pulled out of public events on Friday to focus on, quote, pressing matters. This announcement fuels further speculation that South African President Jacob Zuma may soon be pushed out. Zuma has been in power since 2009 and has been dogged by corruption allegations. Egypt is on high alert after the government launched a massive security operation across mass swaths of territory, including the northern Sinai Peninsula, on Friday. The Egyptian military is going after terrorist organizations in the region, including the so-called Islamic State. Egypt has closed its border with the Gaza Strip due to the operation. The operation comes before a scheduled presidential election in March. There is no indication how long the mission will last. And the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, are now officially open. North and South Korea walked into the Olympic Stadium under a Korean unification flag during an opening ceremony filled with fireworks and cultural displays. 94 nations will compete in the Games, including 8 African nations. Eritrea and Nigeria are making their first appearances at the Winter Games. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Eunice Wunjiro. Now, more than 20 Ethiopian migrants are missing off Yemen after being forced into the sea. This is according to the United Nations International Organization for Migration, or IOM. The missing people are said to have been on one of the four boats that brought at least 600 Ethiopians to the coast of Yemen's Shabwa province. Despite warnings from UN agencies to discourage migrants from embarking on such perilous trips, many still embark on such perilous journeys. DW's Annabel Steffers spoke to Monica Kiriak, Public Information Officer at IOM in Niger, to find out what her organization is doing to prevent people from embarking on such dangerous trips in search for greener pastures.
In terms of communications, at IOM, we work a lot on sensitizing migrants, meaning we have four orientation offices in Niger, in Agadez, Arlit, Dirku, and Niamey. And then for each one, we have 10 community mobilizers that go to the ghettos every day, to bus stations, to inform migrants on the risks of irregular migration. So not to convince them, but just to offer them accurate information so they can make informed decisions.
For how long are you now based in Niger?
I've been in Niger for a year and a half.
Year and a half, okay. So you came after the Niger banned human trafficking. Compared in this year, how did the situation change?
Well, I think in 2016, there were about 300,000 migrants leaving Niger. So not only Nigerians, but third country nationals as well transiting through Niger. And then about 100,000 coming back from either Libya or Algeria. And then I think this year, last year in 2017, there were about 70,000 leaving Niger and 100,000 coming back. So the numbers have changed, and also the fluxes have inverted last year. So there are more migrants coming back than actually leaving Niger.
And when you talk to these migrants, what kind of impression you have?
I think it's very clear. The most common answer we hear is that we don't have economic opportunities at home. We don't have jobs. Some of them have studied as well, so they have an education. But they can simply not find a job and support their families. They are often the oldest sibling in the family, so they have to provide for the other ones as well. They might not have parents, so they rely on themselves to provide for the whole family. So this is what really pushes them, trying to find other opportunities abroad and hoping that Europe will bring that for them.
Monica Kiriak, Public Information Officer at IOM in Niger.
Moving on, the leader of Germany's Social Democrats, Martin Schulz, says he will no longer seek the post of foreign minister in a future Grand Coalition government or any other post in the new cabinet. On Wednesday, Schulz's party struck a deal with Chancellor Angela Merkel's Conservatives. Schulz gave up the SPD leadership and announced his intention to take the post of foreign minister. But that ambition drew strong criticism from SPD members who must ratify the coalition deal in a vote. Amrita Kima spoke to DW's correspondent Thomas Sparrow and started by asking him how much of a surprise this development was.
Well, it is a surprise because he had announced only a few days ago that he wanted to become the next foreign minister. However, it seemed that within the SPD, the debate about personnel, about who took what office, took precedence over the debate about the content within those 177 pages, the coalition deal that was agreed between the Conservatives and the Social Democrats. And that debate, the fact that the Social Democrats were debating on personnel issues and not specifically on the matters within that coalition deal, definitely prompted Martin Schulz to make that announcement today.
So obviously, Thomas, Gabriel is very disgruntled. The question is, did Martin Schulz step aside or was he pushed?
Well, there are some within the SPD who are actually saying already that Sigmar Gabriel should remain as a foreign minister. Let's remember that Sigmar Gabriel is among the most popular politicians here in Germany. His approval ratings are very high, and many in the SPD see him as a very good foreign minister. However, he was obviously disappointed by the fact that Martin Schulz wanted that post as foreign minister himself.
DW's political correspondent, Thomas Sparrow.
Now, we'd like to remind you that we are also live on Facebook, so make sure you to leave your comments there and we'll read them out as soon as we can. Now, despite not being known for their snowy climate, African countries will be represented at this year's Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. The opening ceremony kicked off today in the South Korean city with the delegations of Ghana leading the parade, followed by Nigeria. This year marks Nigeria's first participation in the Games, with three female athletes making up a bobsled team and the fourth one to compete in skeleton. As Samuel Lukoya reports from Lagos, all eyes will be on the athletes as they vie to become the first Africans to win a medal.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Olympia!
Nigeria is celebrating its first Winter Olympic athletes. The four athletes are based in the United States, where they did their training. They were well received when they visited Nigeria briefly before traveling to South Korea for the Games. Until now, Nigerians were never known to be interested in the Winter Olympics. But many Nigerians, like Jane Agbonifo, say they will keenly follow this year's Games because of the athletes.
Given the level of media coverage about the girls, it would be nice to follow the Games in South Korea to see how they will perform. Nigeria has won so many medals before in the Summer Olympics. Who knows, the girls may help the country win his first medals in the Winter Olympics.
But the athletes are looking beyond medals. Simi Adiagbo, who will represent Nigeria in the skeleton event, says it is important that they have broken new grounds to be the first athletes to represent Africa in their various events.
No, I mean, I think we're always shooting for the top spot, but I think knowing that what we've accomplished thus far is very monumental and it's been historic in nature, I think the first that we're experiencing, that will last forever. And I think that's what we're going to take with us, leaving the Games, medal or no medal.
It's so good.
Wherever they went, the athletes were well received with applause for their determination to succeed. With no support from the government, they managed to raise money to do their training and buy their equipment. They even funded the formation of a bobsled and skeleton federation in Nigeria. They believe the federation will help Nigeria develop homegrown talented bobsled and skeleton athletes who will participate in future Winter Olympics. Seun Adigun, captain of the bobsled team, is confident the newly formed bobsled and skeleton federation will promote both games in Nigeria.
You know, want to make sure that there's a legacy that's left so that there can be a continuation of the Bobsled and Skeleton Federation. There are things that we have in place right now to help that execution, whether it's now bringing in coaches from Nigeria to go with us to Olympic Games. We have athletes that are coming in that are already in the federation to compete next season as well.
Adigun and her colleagues believe their dream to produce homegrown bobsled and skeleton athletes can be achieved with the kind of determination they put in to qualify for the Winter Olympics.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. Now, Eddie, there are actually 8 African countries participating in the Winter Olympics. Mm-hmm. How great is that?
That is great. This is actually the most African countries' representation in this Winter Olympic Games. But the billion-dollar question will remain, Eunice. Will this be the first time an African country will win a medal in the Winter Olympic Games?
Let's hope and wait and see. Now, we have comments coming in and about the Nigerians who are representing the country. Emmanuel Stevens Eyekomogba says, congratulations to Team Nigeria. We are proud of you. Please go for gold.
I totally agree. Go for gold. Also, Namdi Anene says, congratulations, ladies. We are proud of you. And thanks, DWL. Thanks to you, too.
Thank you so much for your comments. Now, as part of our series this week on the rights of women, we published a video about an Ivorian entrepreneur who is working hard to bridge the gap between men and women in Africa. And this brought about a number of comments. Uh-huh. Mike from Cameroon said it wouldn't change the conception that 85% men are chauvinist by nature. In southern Cameroon, my country, generally it's the man that pays the dowry, so the woman tends to be under the man.
That's an interesting comment. But he continues saying, I believe whether the women own the means of production, it wouldn't help much to improve their rights as it is now. Also, Bendazi Edufo from Ghana says, with women having the means of production as most men do, they can also improve their rights since they will depend less on men.
And David from Southeast Nigeria is saying, yes, I think that this will help more to improve the right of women in our continent generally.
And finally, Theresa Moriba from Sierra Leone says, when women have the means of production, she can help her country in so many ways. She can provide job facilities to the youth, as well as help her family by bringing income in the home. It's good for women to be empowered because they will reach out to the poor and needy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Keep them coming. Just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa.
In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, today on African Roots, we delve into the story of Queen Muhumuza of Rwanda, who challenged colonial oppression.
Muhumuza rebelled against the Rwandan establishment and the German colonial administration, which ruled Rwanda then.
And as usual on Friday, we have our round of sports with DW's Chuck Penford. Don't miss out on that. But first, let's go to Zambia. In a bid to boost investments in the country, China has embarked on acquiring prime land across the country to erect business structures that will in return provide employment to locals. But behind the positive ventures that China might have for the country, ordinary Zambians are not happy with what they deem as China's expansion policy that could render them landless in the long run. Despite assurances from authorities, Zambians think that it's high time that the government comes up with a land policy that will protect them from getting expropriated. From Lusaka, Kaiti Sikombe reports.
A new shopping mall is under construction in Lusaka's Kalundu residential area. It is one of the many structures that are being put up by Chinese nationals in prime areas in the capital. Local residents like Evans Chongo are not happy with the authorities for issuing permits to the Chinese for land that is not only meant for business ventures, but also for residential purposes. There are now several hundred Chinese nationals living in Lusaka.
Access, which is the human rights, is access to land, accommodation, water, health, and food. But this human right has been denied to the Zambian, the indigenous. It's a struggle to access land, but foreigners, the fortnight, they access land and they get title deeds. So the best is that before the situation gets out of hand, it's high time that we start making interventions.
Despite the big amounts of money that China is investing in Zambia, analyst Naomi Lunat thinks that the future generation will not have the chance to own land.
If the trend of giving land to foreigners or potential investors, it will mean that even by the time our young people, you know, they grow, they'll not have access to empower themselves to own property, to own land.
Members of the Chinese business community are keen to put things in a positive light. Liu Xiu Kwang runs a trading business in Zambia.
The environment is very good. I mean, it's the environment for investment. Besides that, the people, they are quite friendly. And also, the most attractive things for us is, you know, Zambia is a peace-making in whole African continent. We are not taken as foreigners any longer. Who has been taken as a part of this community, a part of Zambia. Right now, we are brothers and sisters with tribes. We always say, home is where heart is. Our business is here. Our heart is here. This is our home.
And Patrick Chisanga, the executive director of the Zambia Development Agency, a government agency that promotes investment, says the Chinese have the right approach to doing business abroad.
I think their greatest competitive advantage is that they are very much hands-on. Chinese investors will come here, they will go and visit the places or where they want to invest, they will lead very simple lives, they will accept any form of accommodation, particularly in the rural areas where conditions can be a little difficult. Whereas investors from other parts of the world might not be so liberal.
However, Zambian Lands Minister Jane Kapata says the ministry is working on a new land policy that will, among other things, restrict the tenure of land for foreigners.
Kathy Sikumbe reporting.
Eddie, this has brought some comments also on our page.
Mm-hmm.
And Steward Mubanga says our government is very selfish. Government officials are only interested in making money for their benefits, not for us, the majority poor Zambians. I don't know what we will benefit from our country.
Interesting comment there. Ibrahim Jalu, Gambia, from Gambia, I should say, says the Zambian government's decision to sell empty lands to foreigners is not a good idea for the citizens and the future youths of the country. This will affect the future youth of Zambia not to have any access to own any property of land.
And Aina Jugor Anthony Goderich from Sierra Leone says, why must you sell rather than lease? You upset my stomach. Please dispatch an independent group of investigators to Sierra Leone to gain some insight into the far-fetched implications of land lease, not even sale to large-scale foreign investors. Those are your comments.
Mm-hmm. Interesting comments coming there.
DW, African Roots.
Some 100 years ago in East Africa lived one fierce woman, Queen Muhumuza. At a time when women seldom featured in public life, this widow of a Rwandan king stood out for several reasons. Not only did she fight for justice on her own account, she also stood up against colonial oppression more than once, becoming a symbol of resistance under the name Nyabingi. Her story, compiled by Jane Ayeko Kumet and presented by Isaac Mugabe.
Muhumuza's fight started out as a very personal struggle. It was the fight of a woman once at the center of power who had seen that power taken away from her. The wife of Rwandan King Tshisekedi IV and mother of his rightful successor, she fell prey to an intrigue after the king's death in 1895. When she was denied the right of succession, Muhumuza rebelled against the Rwandan establishment and the German colonial administration, which ruled Rwanda then. Her personal struggle soon grew into a whole anti-colonial struggle against the administrations of British Uganda, Rwanda, and Belgian Congo. Her influence grew rapidly, says Mwambusa Ndebesa, professor of history at Uganda's Makerere University.
Muhumuza was operating from an area, of course, during the pre-colonial period, and there had been such a spirit mediums and spiritual people using spiritual powers to mobilize the population. She was using a carrot called Nyabingi and used it as an ideology for mobilizing, also an ideology for instilling courage among the fighters.
Muhumuza acted as a spirit medium for Nyabingi, possibly the spirit of a queen who had lived centuries before. In this way, not only did this African warrior queen resist colonialism in East Africa, she also dared to fight it. For all we know, Queen Muhumuza was powerful, intelligent, and full of charisma, yet little is known about her.
The history of women was edited out of history, because history is always in the service of power, and the oral tradition history was in the service of men as well as kings. Imperial colonial history was also in the service of men. It was patriarchal history. It was a history that glamorized, idealized Europe and not Africa. And worse still, women suffered double tragedy in the sense that they were edited out as Africans and edited out as women.
Colonial records tell us about Muhumuza's fighters confronting troops all across the region. In the end, though, her magic was no match for modern weapons. In 1913, the British arrested her and deported her to their power base in Mengo, Kampala, where she died more than 30 years later. Though today she's not widely known, hers is a story to behold and to remember, argues Ndebesa.
Having stood against the then order, she represents a different dimension of the struggle, and her image should be rehabilitated so that she becomes an inspiring model for those who are struggling against certain forces that put down the marginalized.
Little known across Africa, Muhumuza's story has been integrated into the Rastafari movement, where she has come to symbolize anti-imperial resistance even beyond Africa. The Nyabingi cult surrounding her person has lent its name to the Nyabingi Mansion, a branch of the Rastafari movement.
That report was compiled by Jane Ayeko Kumet and is part of African Roots, a project realized in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation.
Now we move on to sports, and with over 15 games to be competed in the 23rd Winter Olympic Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea, North and South Korea are forming a unified ice hockey team and will have a joint entrance behind the United Korea flag during the opening ceremony. Now, Africa will also see its highest number of participants in the Winter Olympics with 8 countries. But will this be the first time an African would win a medal? Well, I spoke to DW's Chuck Penfold from the sports desk to delve into these and more. Chuck, the Winter Olympic Games begin today, and how significant is it, especially considering that South Korea is teaming up with North Korea, forming an ice hockey team?
It's a nice gesture, particularly given the fact that there's been so much tension in recent months between Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader in the West, and the fact that they've taken, I think it's 5 North Koreans onto the South Korean team in ice hockey is a nice gesture. Whether it will help the team is another story, because you've got a South Korean team that had been presumably training together for years. In fact, the American coach of the South Koreans expressed a little bit of reluctance about it, because you know, that it could disrupt the team a little bit. And you've got a feel for the, I think it is 5 South Korean players that won't be able to participate in the Olympic Games because of it. But it's a nice gesture of, you know, peace and kumbaya.
Now, no African country has ever won a medal in the Winter Olympic Games, and I don't think you believe this is going to be the first time an African country will do that, is it?
I think it would be a real upset, you know, just really the achievement for the African athletes, and, you know, lots of other athletes too, is just getting to the Olympic Games. The Olympics are a great event. You know, I would say to African fans, just sit back, watch your athletes, and enjoy it.
I'm sure Africans would love to see an African hold a medal. But yeah, only time will tell. But let's move away from the Winter Games. Let's check out what's going to be happening in the Bundesliga. And of course, in the Signal Iduna Park, it's Borussia Dortmund. And they're going to be welcoming the opponent, Hamburger SV. Now, without Aubameyang, what's going to happen?
Dortmund's going to win. They've got this replacement on loan from Chelsea, Michy Batshuayi, who came in last week in his first match and scored a couple of goals. He didn't play that much in Chelsea, but his goals to minutes ratio was very high. He's a little bit younger than Aubameyang at just 24. So I think until the end of the season, based on what we saw last week, Dortmund have nothing to worry about.
So I guess who needs Pierre when the bat can score? Well, we'll see how things will pan out. But also at the Allianz Arena, Bayern Munich, well, the man in form, James Rodriguez, is going to be in action, of course. They'll be welcoming Schalke 04 to the arena. How's it going to go?
I think, you know, Schalke is having a pretty good season under their very young new head coach, Domenico Tedesco. They're in fifth, so they're just out of a Champions League spot, but level on goal difference with Dortmund, so they're really on the hunt for the Champions League, which would be a big achievement for Schalke, who've had, you know, some off years. You know, Bayern Munich are just so strong. They're running away with the league again this year. As you say, James Rodriguez is really firing on all cylinders right now, and I think, you know, if Schalke were to get a point out of this, this is be a big upset, and there would be a lot of upset in the Bavarian capital.
Thank you very much, Chuck, for your time.
Okay, thank you.
I was speaking to DW's Chuck Penfold.
Now, another topic that we've covered on our Facebook page is, it's about malaria and David Beckham. We put a question saying, does Beckham have a solution to fighting a pandemic like malaria, where global institutions like the United Nations have failed? Does he have a solution to fight this malaria pandemic? And Daniel Wanyama from Kenya commented and saying, let him try. United Nations have failed. Yes, but he may do something good.
Well, Otito Nweke from Nigeria says, yes, in his capacity as world celebrity, let him communicate the major cause of malaria epidemic to the world to know and disease or desist from them.
And Didas from Rwanda is saying, how can one person achieve what the entire world has failed? I don't expect so. I think it's a good thing that he's actually trying to solve this malaria issue.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everybody knows David Beckham. So of course, whatever he says is going to be very influential. A lot of people that see him as a role model or as an icon would definitely take his word seriously.
Yes, thank you so much for your comments. Thank you also to all those who've been joining us live on Facebook. We are glad that you could join us. Thank you, Mr. Kualar Bongonkang, Bivondo Kelvin, and Zachary Elias for joining us on Facebook. Thank you for all of you out there. We want to wish you all a wonderful weekend. I've been your host, Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Keep it Africa linked.